This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Hello, and welcome to the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast. I am Jason, and with me, as usual, is Rich. Hello, Rich.
Hey, what's up?
Not a whole lot, you know, just here to celebrate the life and career of the great Bob Lanier, one of the greatest big men in NBA history. Unfortunately, gets a little bit overshadowed because of the era that he played in, but, you know, great player from pretty much every account, a great guy, great ambassador for the NBA, and a really big loss for the NBA community.
Absolutely, yeah, it's a pretty tough week here with Lanier passing away, and a guy that, yeah, we'll talk about his entire career and try to shine as much of a spotlight on his career as possible, because like you said, yeah, he is a guy that gets definitely overshadowed playing the same position while, you know, arguably the greatest of all time, was playing. So it's kind of tough, you know, when you're playing the same position as him, and it was a tough era for him to play in, and, you know, his teams obviously weren't as good as, you know, Kareem's teams, and weren't as good as some other teams in the league. And yeah, so that kind of helped him, you know, get overshadowed a bit. But yeah, I think in, you know, this week especially, it's one of those like unfortunate things where, like, you know, someone passes away and it's like, that's when people really start going like, hey, wow, this guy had like a really cool career and he did a lot of cool stuff after his playing career as well. And here's the fun facts and all that sort of stuff. So I will try to shine as much of a spotlight on him and his career. But I think his post-career stuff is just as pretty awesome too. So excited to kind of jump into that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So just kind of overview. Yeah, he was nicknamed Dobber. Also, we got Babadob here on the basketball reference.
Babadob, yeah.
Babadob. I haven't heard that one, but I like it.
I like so, Babadob. That's kind of good. Yeah.
Whether that was really he was called that or not, I like it. So, yes, played from 1971 to 84. Played for mostly for the Pistons. Late in his career, played for the Bucks as well. One of the great centers of his time, averaged 20.1 points per game and 10.1 rebounds per game in his career. Dealt with injuries a lot, and you know, sort of second half of his career ended up, you know, not really playing full seasons for the most part. But if you look at his peak, 72 to 79, averaged 23.9 points per game, 12.5 rebounds per game, 3.5 assists, 1.2 steals, 2.0 blocks. So he pretty much just could do it all. If you, when we were diving into 50 greatest players, our series we did many years ago, we were, you know, considering him a candidate for that. If you look at some of the ranks he has all time, 44th all time PR, 55th in win shares, 55th in win shares for 48, 34th in blocks, box plus minus, which of course only measures after 74, 64th in value replacement player. So definitely still, you know, a guy who has a case for, you know, top 50, top 75 of all time. Unfortunately, just missed both those teams in the NBA's 50th anniversary team and the 75th anniversary team. Would have definitely, I think a lot of people felt like he would have been the 51st guy had, you know, had they done that in 1997, when they did the NBA's all-time team. But yeah, eight-time All-Star. Interesting, never made an all-NBA team. And you already kind of alluded to this.
Tough competition, right? Unfortunately, at his position. So
Right. I mean, you got Kareem, obviously. But yeah, if you look at the guys who were all-NBA during Lanier's prime, remember at this time there's only two teams.
Right.
There's another third all-NBA team. So,
yeah, another important distinction there, too.
So other guys who you know, made the team during the time, yeah, Kareem.
Good.
You got Will Reed,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, Will Chamberlain.
He's pretty good, yeah.
Dave Cowens,
yeah.
You got Bob McAdoo, you got Bill Walton, you got Moses Malone, and then, you know, guys who didn't make it during that time. You got Artis Gilmore, you got Wes Unseld, you got Nate Thurman. So, like, yeah, it's pretty hard to make that team. You know, I mean, you would have thought, yeah, one of those years he might have snuck in at a second team, but yeah, just so many great big men during that time. It's like, oh yeah, well, when you actually look at the guys who made it, and like, he was the third best big man in the league for a lot of that time, you know, as guys kind of like bounced up and down. But never quite made it to the second team. In fact, in 1974, he finished third in MVP voting, but he was behind two centers, you know, Kareem and Bob McAdoo. So it's like, oh yeah, you think, oh yeah, he was just an eight-time All-Star. Like, oh, he never made the All-NBA team. And first of all, why are you saying that voice about it, like he was being sarcastic about it, like he was so great, like, but But yeah,
What they need to do is you know, similar how people have conversations these days about like, we should just have like, you know, backcourt and front court or whatever. They should have had two centers, you know, two centers on the All NBA team, and then I don't know, point guard. There's no point guard. Who cares? You know?
Yeah,
we got two centers.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you got like eight centers of the team. Yeah.
Because people now that same guy that's like, that guy's like, why don't they just do the 10 best players in the league or what is, you know? Okay, fine. Then they're all centers.
Yeah.
Great.
You and I do the same voice for that guy, apparently.
Yeah, that guy's a jerk. Yeah, I hate that guy.
He really is. Yeah. Actually, I'm kind of pro positionless all NBA team.
No, I am too. Yeah. Like that guy's right on some. You know, he's not always wrong, but, you know, it's like that worst guy you know. You know what I mean? The worst guy you know makes a great point. Like that's that guy, unfortunately.
Yeah, that guy. Exactly. So, yes. So, some other rankings during his playing career. He's five times he was top five win shares, 48, five times top five in value replacement player, seven times was top five in PER. So a lot of seasons where you could argue he was definitely one of the five best players in the league. Also six times he was top 10 in points per game, four times top 10 in rebounds per game, although he was never in the top five in either for whatever reason. But he was, you know, unquestionably the leader, top player in the Pistons during the 70s, just an incredibly athletic shot blocker, despite the knee problems, which we'll get into. You know, he had a huge body, you know, great score defender. And also, like, he had a great shooting touch and a great hook shot. You know, other than Kareem, you know, had one of the best hook shots in NBA history. And this has been disputed in some quarters. I'm going to go in this instance with Print the Legend. The largest shoe ever created by a shoe company, Allen Edmonds, was a size 22 for Lanier. So some people say it was 22. Some people say it was 18.5. I'm going to go 22. Print the Legend, Rich. What do you say?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I was reading a little bit about that too. And yeah, I saw that a lot of people were like, 18.5. I'm like, 18.5 is a pretty big shoe, but
good enough.
Still quite a large shoe. Like the man had large feet. Let's just go with that. You know, I like the size 22 for Lanier. It's like, you know, he doesn't get that much else done for him. So yeah, give him this. Let him have this.
Yeah. Yes. So, and then, as you mentioned, played for the Pistons generally weren't all that good, although they had some pretty good years, which we'll get into a bit, but he played under eight coaches in 10 seasons with the Pistons.
That's not
each
good.
Coach hired or fired in the middle of the season. So even more disruptive, but he is the Pistons all-time leader in scoring, average 22.7 points per game, second in rebounds per game, 11.8. Can you guess who is first in rebounds per game in Pistons history?
The first in rebounds per game in Pistons history.
Yes.
I don't think it's Ben Wallace, but it's probably Ben Wallace, right?
Yeah, you would think it'd be Ben Wallace or maybe Dennis Rodman. It is Andre Drummond, my friend.
Oh.
Yeah. Right.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah. Third in total points and rebounds. Still has a good case for greatest Pistons ever, certainly, you know, among the club of guys you would consider for that. So.
Yeah, I would try to, you know, when you pose that question in the notes, I'm thinking, you have, like, obviously more success with, like, an Isaiah, so you get why people would go towards Isaiah or whatever, and there's the Billups and those crew, but, you know, their tenure there wasn't that long, and, you know what I mean? I don't know. Yeah, I would say Lanier is probably... I'd put him either one or two. I would say Isaiah probably would be in the conversation, but or Dave Bing, I guess you could probably put in the conversation too. But
sure, yeah.
I think Lanier, at worst, you could put him number three, I think. At worst, I think.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All right, so I think we're going to dive a little bit into his careers. We're going to start with the early Pistons year, 71 to 75. So, he was the number one overall pick out of St. Bonaventure. He led them to the Final Four. Unfortunately, late in the prior game before the Final Four, he injured his knee in a collision with future teammate Chris Ford. Didn't actually play in the Final Four. And then when he signed his NBA contract, he was actually in the hospital recuperating from knee surgery. It would be the first of eight knee surgeries in his career. He reported to Pistons training camp he was limping, significant pain, and he was overweight from a long period of inactivity following surgery, but he played 82 games anyway.
Yeah.
So, 71, he was an all rookie team. He averaged 15.6 points per game, 8.1 rebounds, only played 24 minutes per game. So they at least made some accommodation for his knee issues, but it was the first winning season for the Pistons. They won 45 games in Detroit, so that since 1958, though by fluke they missed the playoffs. They actually started that season 9-0. Lanier later said, "Yeah, I wasn't healthy when I first got in the league. I shouldn't have played my first year. My knee was so sore every single day that it was ludicrous to be doing what I was doing. Felt like the franchise would have been better off if they held him out, but obviously that's in retrospect. And yeah, they had a solid core at that point. You know, Dave Bing still—he's 27, so you know, he was a few years older than Lanier. They had Jimmy Walker, who you know was also a good player, good scorer on the team with Lanier. So yeah, like things might be looking up in old Detroit. And yeah, one of the great things about Bing playing in Detroit, hey, Lanier and Bing would play poker with the four tops. So that's
Hell yeah.
I would love to play. Some great times. Yeah.
That is great. But yeah, you mentioned their 45 win season. And this is, you know, we talk a lot about like, especially in this era, like the divisions and the conferences or whatever are kind of a mess. And the way that they're doing the playoffs are kind of a mess. So you have the Western Conference, the Midwest Division. Milwaukee has 66. They're in the playoffs. They have 66 wins. Of course, they're in the playoffs. Bulls have 51 wins. So they are the other team out of the Midwest Division. The Phoenix Suns have 48 wins. They're miss out. The Detroit Pistons have 45 wins. They miss out. Believe it or not, the Suns had more wins than the Pacific Division leader, Los Angeles Lakers. They had the same amount of wins, 48 wins for both. And then the other representative from the playoffs in the Pacific Division was the San Francisco Warriors at 41 wins. So significantly less than both of the Suns and the Detroit Pistons. And then on the flip side, on the Eastern Conference, you have the Atlanta Hawks at 36 and 46 that make it into the playoffs. So it's just kind of the wonky, you know, it's a smaller playoff. So, like, you know, you're going to win 45 games and be left out because, you know, Milwaukee had 66 and the Bulls had 51. And the way they set it up, that's how it was. So, yeah, only four teams from both conferences go in. So, you know, because that's a great season for Detroit, especially given where they had been for, like you said, the last two decades. You know, that's a hell of a season for them. And it was the building, you know, starting the building blocks for what would be this, you know, linear Detroit Pistons team.
Yes, although it would go right for a little while. 1972, Lanier, he's playing full time now, 25.7 points per game, 14.2 rebounds, becomes an all-star
for
the first
time. Success, baby. Let's go.
Unfortunately, yeah, individual success, good. Team success, not so great. They only win 26 games. They get their coaching change after a 6-4 start. Butch Van Bredenkoff, you know, he's got other things. He's not perhaps not so happy in Detroit. He's a little fired up, a little bit crazy. He's like, yeah, I'm out of here. They start 6-4. Things are good. They're going to go. Eventually, they go to Earl Lloyd. And, unfortunately, that didn't go well. A big issue that year, Dave Bing, he suffers a detached retina, only plays 45 games. The Pistons defense goes from fifth in the league previously to 16th in the league, which is out of 17 teams, so not great.
No.
And so it all kind of falls apart for the Pistons that season. But 73 things turn around a bit. They do have a early season coaching change. Earl Lloyd is out. Ray Scott comes in. So this actually does turn out well. They finish 40-42. They make some changes to the roster that are important. Jimmy Walker, yeah, he didn't get along too much with Earl Lloyd. He got traded for Stu Lance, who's more veteran presence. They get Don Adams. They get Chris Ford. They get John Mengelt all added to the team, which are, you know, key guys in their mid-70s team. Curtis Rowe, you know, he came out of UCLA. This was his second season. He's also coming along. He would be an all-star later. So, yeah, they start to, you know, 40-42, you know, nothing like outstanding, but they definitely make some moves that end up being beneficial to their – Scott is a much better coach for the team. He's, you know, he's younger. I mean, obviously, Earl Lloyd, he was a great scout and, you know, he was a really important player in the '50s, but he's significantly older than them. Where Ray Scott had just played in the league recently, you know, closer in age to the guys, closer to, you know, what the more modern player. Mm-hmm. And Lanier credited him with an improving coach. Said, hey, yeah, he took over. We started playing collectively as a unit. We had a good feeling. We related well to one another. And that pays dividends the next season.
Absolutely. Yeah, things can really finally get on track, finally.
Yes, 52 wins, which is the franchise's best SRS and record that they would ever have until the 1988 season. And actually, a funny thing, had the rules not changed about two teams per division making the playoffs, the Pistons actually would have missed the postseason. So
great. Again.
Yeah. Because they were third in the division behind the Bucks and the Bulls. Again, funny, basically the same story in 71. And then Lanier, 22.5 points per game, 13.3 rebounds, 3 blocks per game, 1.4 steals per game. gains the reputation as one of the best defenders in the league. Although, interestingly, he never made an all-defensive team. But the reason he didn't make an all-defensive team is basically the same reason he never made the all-NBA team, is because the centers were so great. And Nate Thurmond, was making that defensive team pretty much every year. You know, you had Kareem making it sometimes, you know, Walton later, other guys like that. So perfectly understandable in context, but just sort of interesting. Lanier, he led that season's All-Star game, 24 points, named the All-Star game MVP. And the Pistons, unfortunately, well, at least for them, fell to the Bulls in the Western Conference semifinals, a classic game seven. Lanier's great in that series, 26.3 points per game on 54 true shooting, 15.3 rebounds. But the Pistons, they made a huge comeback in game seven, but unfortunately, with 3 seconds left, Dennis Autry of the Bills tips an inbounds pass by Bing. Norm Van Leer dribbles out the clock to preserve the Chicago victory. And Ray Scott would later say, "I'll never forget that series with the Bulls. Bob was a Spartan. He did everything that we could possibly get him to do. He, in my opinion, at that time showed that he was one of the greatest in the league because he was competing against Thurmond and Collins and Reed. And he also said he was as good a big man as I've ever seen. And I grew up with Will Chamberlain."
There it is. That's high praise. Yeah, it's an all-time great series. I mean, most games are pretty close. Right. Game three decided by 1 point. Game five decided by 4 points. Game six decided by just a couple points. And then game seven, as you said, just 2 points as well. So a very, very close, hotly contested seven-game series. Could have easily gone any other way. And like you said, literally a tip-in is what, you know, really does it for Chicago. So yeah, really, really cool, like all-time great series. And yeah, it's disappointing that somebody had to lose that series, and right. You know, it's a really, really cool one. A lot of those 70s Western Conference, I mean, they were all really, really awesome. And it unfortunately features two teams like the Bulls and the Pistons, who always seemed, you know, good, but not quite good enough. They would always, you know, they would always battle each other in those first few rounds or whatever. And sure. Then, you know, they'd face the Lakers and it's like, nah, shit.
or the Bucks.
Yeah. It's like, crap.
It's like, they weren't as pretty much, the Bulls and the Pistons' problem is they weren't as good as Kareem or they weren't as good as Will Chamberlain.
Yep, exactly. Both in their career and their teams and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So, 1975. So, very important. Fred Zellner, one of the original owners, you know, going back to the NBL and going back to the formation of the NBA when the NBL and the NBA merged. Fred Zellner's been the Pistons' owner for that entire time. In Fort Wayne and in Detroit, of course. Finally, I think he was the last of the original owners to sell. You know, he sells to Bill Davidson, who ends up being like regarded as one of the best owners in NBA history. You know, stewards over the Pistons come back in, you know, late 80s and, you know, some of those great years. However, it's a rough start for him. Dave Bing and Don Adams, they both hold out in the preseason over a contract dispute. You know, Bing, he felt he wasn't being treated fairly. Eventually they do both, you know, agree to play, but Adams later in the season ends up getting released despite being a key role player and great defender. This angers Bing a lot. You know, he's frustrated with a lot of things in management. He and Ray Scott have issues. They end up having falling out. They don't speak for several years, in fact, after this. He and Lanier were close. They were roommates. You know, they had a very good relationship with each other. But Bing's even mad at Lanier. Like, yeah, you're not speaking out more. You're not, you know, raising any fuss about us losing Adams. He's a really key player. And then they fall back down. They're 40-42. They lose in the first round against the Sonics. Bing and Lanier both are All-Stars again. But it's time to be done. Bing requests a trade, ends up being traded to the Bullets for Kevin Porter. Actually, Kevin Porter ends up missing most of the next season with injury, so it doesn't really help them immediately. But, Bing talks in the book about, you know, in his book, Dave Bing wrote a book. I actually just happened to see the bookstore yesterday and read a little bit about it. And Bing reads a description about he and Bob Lanier were in tears together over, you know, when the trade finally comes, Lanier's like, you know, just veto the trade, man. You know, you stay here. You know, we can do this together. And Bing's just like, man, I want to play with you, but I'm just, you know, I'm done with the situation. I'm done with Detroit. You know, I need to move on. So, just a really emotional situation for them, and, you know, kind of an end of the era for the Pistons.
Yeah, it really is in a lot of ways. And we'll move on to kind of the late Pistons career. and the next chapter of Lanier's career. So 1976, he plays only 64 games because of injuries. He does miss the All-Star game for the first time since his rookie year as well. You're not going to believe this, but the Pistons get a new coach. 60, they go 36-46. Ray Scott is fired midseason for assistant Herb Brown, who is Larry Brown's brother, and many rumors about him campaigning to get the job pretty secretly as well from that. But Greg Eno from Out of Bounds describes Scott's dismissal, says, quote, 30 years ago and a month, Scott was conducting practice. The Pistons were in a terrible slump at the time, and management strode on the court, relieved Scott of his silver whistle, and marched him off the court to give him the Ziggy, the Detroit word for a coach getting fired. So mid-practice.
Ziggy's, yeah, the Ziggy's a great term, though. You know,
that is good. Yeah, we need to bring that back. We need more coaches being fired in the midst of practice, and we need to call it Ziggy. I want the next headline writer to say, you know, Luke Walton gets the Ziggy, you know, who's coaching the Kings, who got hired a couple days ago. They'll be fired in no time. They'll be fired in no time. Yeah, give him a Ziggy. I forget who it even was. He'll get the Ziggy at some point very soon. But Ray Scott, you're thinking, well, you know what, whatever. NBA coach of the year, he's going to get another opportunity in the league. He never did.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Couldn't find a spot for him somewhere in this league of constantly in and out. That had to be a personal decision, right?
He coached in college. He had a bit of a college coaching career, Eastern Michigan University. But yeah,
that's like a big fall, though. Yeah, that's like a big fall to be like, yeah, I'll just coach Eastern Michigan, I guess, forever. So I don't know. That's strange.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, right. So. Yeah, I wonder why that could have possibly been. I wonder what aspect of Ray Scott could have led him to never get I don't know.
As a coach, yeah, can't figure it out.
Mysterious, yeah.
the Pistons did, however, win 10 out of their last 11 games under Herb Brown. They beat the Bucks in the first round. The first playoff series win since 1962 as well. So there you go. Detroit won the deciding third game of the series in Milwaukee, 107-104, securing the win with a great late Chris Ford steal. So yeah, maybe he gave Bob Lanier, you know, knee injuries for the rest of his life, but he secured a win in the playoff series.
So. Yeah, there you go. So it all evens out.
Yeah, there you go. And he hit the first three in NBA history, so good for him.
Exactly, yeah.
Then they would fall. Of course, they were like, oh, we finally got by the Bucks. Thank God. Now we can finally. Now then they lose to the Golden State Warriors 4-2 in the Western Conference semifinals, dropping the sixth game in overtime, 118-116 at the famous Cobo Arena in Detroit. So at this time, Lanier is, you know, you could kind of say, I don't know if slowing down is the right term, but he definitely this year, things were not all the way what they had been. Lanier had a bit of a down year. He scored his fewest points per game aside from his rookie year. His rebounds per game were the lowest since his rookie year. He also blocked the fewest shots per game while in Detroit. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. Yes, they're you know, they make the playoffs. They do pretty well. But yeah, I think he is slowing down a little bit. And is it injuries? Right. Is it age? Is it what's, you know, what exactly is going on with Lanier here? It's tough to say, but hey, you know, the success is coming. So it's, you know,
right. Well, yeah. I mean, it was more durable. He was definitely down that year. He bounced back in terms of, you know, per game stats.
Right.
21 and 25 points per game. But it was definitely more availability now. Now he's like, you know, playing 64 games per year, 53 one year. I mean, he never really. He has one more year where he plays anything close to a full season.
Yeah.
Again. So, he was definitely a bit down in productivity. But yeah, they definitely delivered well in the playoffs and have a nice little run there. And hey, they're going to get Marvin Barnes and the dispersal draft, and then in 77 things are just going to go great.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. When you can acquire a guy whose nickname is Bad News, it's probably going to be good news, and it was not. Okay. 1977, 44-38, they lose to the Warriors in the first round. They added Marvin Barnes in the dispersal draft, as well as ML Carr in free agency, two former members of the Spirits of St. Louis. Barnes did not go great. The 77 season is described really much as best. An absolutely insane, probably the craziest in Pistons history. They won a lot of games, but were completely dysfunctional. This is from John Popanek of Sports Illustrated. He would say, if the Pistons were doing a TV miniseries, they would make Roots seem like Ding Dong School. What? I don't know what Ding Dong School is. I don't know if I know what that reference is. Do you know what Ding Dong School is?
That's a good question.
I know what Roots is. I don't know what Ding Dong School is.
Ding Dong School. No, I'm guessing it's some sort of kid show. You know,
I would assume, yeah.
Yes, right.
Much of the, believe it or not, much of the dysfunction centered around Marvin Bad News Barnes, who was arrested during the season for carrying a gun while on probation. That's not good. And the addition of Herb Brown as coach, who struggled to get along with these strong personalities on his team, which I can't even believe a member of the Brown family could not possibly get along with the members of his professional basketball team. But
that is really, really hard to believe. I'm baffled.
I guess we're just going to have to go into that assumption, but I don't know. That family is very well known for, especially with the, you know, players that might be on the fringes of society, you know, players like it's impossible that he would not, you know, get along perfectly with these guys. But anyway, the Pistons would eventually bench Barnes, who said news didn't come here to sit on no wood, which is an all-time great quote. I would get that on like a you know, there's those like live, laugh, loves or whatever and all that sort of stuff. I want to get where it says news didn't come here to sit on no wood. That's
incredible. We definitely need to, we need to get in marketing. We need to sell some motivational posters. Marvin Barnes and then that quote right there.
News didn't come here to sit on no wood. I love it.
Absolutely.
Later years, Bob Lanier reflected on the dysfunctional Barnes, stating, quote, in the ABA, Marvin Barnes was a great, great player that had issues. They took a chance on him, but Marvin was still in the street life and he affected Eric Money. Eric Money was a Detroit product who played college basketball at Arizona. I could shoot the in-between jumper, and he may have been one of the best that ever played. A few years ago, I ran into Marvin in Houston and said, Bob, I used to get high all the time, and Eric started to get high with me. When someone tells you that, and this is some 20-odd years ago, you want to put your fist right through their head. And I adored Barnes. I liked his personality, and he's as charming as a guy as you ever want to meet. But in terms of him trying to be a part of a team that wins championships, man, it's the best. It's a great way to finish that. Yeah, it didn't go very well. Lanier and Barnes each suffered a broken hand late in the season. Barnes did not appear in the playoffs for Detroit, but Lanier was able to return. Coach Herb Brown also elected to start Eric Money over Kevin Porter. I don't know about that down the stretch. And in the postseason, the Pistons fell to Golden State 2-1, despite winning the opening game of the series 95-90 in Oakland. And then the deciding third game, Bob Lanier put forward a double-double of 33 points, 15 rebounds, shot 72% from the floor, only to be outdueled my fellow Hall of Famer Rick Barry, who scored 35 points to get the Warriors the 109-101 win. And then things would get a little worse for Barnes as he would report to the Rhode Island Department of Corrections in Cranston, Rhode Island. That was in the offseason. He'd serve a 152-day sentence. He had pleaded guilty to a 2-year-old charge that he had attacked a Providence teammate with a tire iron. The judge gave him 3 years probation, and the October 1976 gun at the Detroit airport was a probation violation, causing the requirement to complete that initial sentence. So, yeah, not great. As far as Barnes, he had a quote in People magazine that says, I'm not your apple pie and ice cream guy like Doc. Throwing some shade at Philadelphia star Julius Erving. I'm the baddest. I'm for real black. Wow. Yeah, so he lives with the hungers. Of the Providence ghetto where he grew up. I did not know that Providence had a strong, but there you go. So, when he first signed as a pro with the Spirits of St. Louis in 1974 for $2.1 million, he leased an apartment with 13 phones and bought a silver Rolls Royce, a diamond initial ring for each hand, and a ruby necklace that said news. And he said, money is the root of all of my evils. 13 phones.
13 phones.
That seems excessive.
Yeah, that's like millennial behavior right there. You know, that's was Marvin Barnes the first millennial?
I don't know. May have been. Yeah. So now are these like, these can't all be on different lines. It's just like any room that he's in, he can take a call, right? Type of thing. To be fair, Marvin probably had one or two different lines. There was probably certain lines to do certain things. But I think on normal, if you're calling, if you're, hey, you want to come hang out tonight, like he's got one in the bathroom for sure, right? He's got one in the bedroom for sure. Kitchen, that's three already.
It's probably more the long distance. Yeah, that's really what's going to kill you in the 70s.
The collectible.
Yeah, I don't know how many. I don't know how expensive phones are at that point. Whether it's really that expensive to have 13 phones. Maybe,
I feel like you got the hookups for him. I mean,
just
plug him in and then, you got him. I mean, the house had to be very loud, though. Like, anytime a call would be made, there's just so many things ringing. Yeah.
That's so pathetic. Yeah, that would not care for that. Could you imagine living with phones ringing in your house these days? Like,
I know, it'd be awful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or people like calling you. Ugh. Gross.
Yeah, it's gross. Yeah. You're
talking on the phone. Get out of here.
You that thing. Yeah, right.
1978. So after spending the offseason in prison, Barnes was traded to the Buffalo Braves in November, bringing Gus Gerard and John Shumate to Detroit. Believe it or not, you're going to be shocked by this once again, Jason, but Herb Brown replaced as the coach by GM Bob Kaufman, who 3-time All-Star. He was hired soon after his playing career. He was the GM at this time as well. So they, that, well, why don't you be our coach too? He was the GM and the coach. That usually goes very, very well. And even in today's NBA and that NBA, it always goes well when you get the GM and a coach at the same time. But then the team would miss the playoffs for the first time in 4 years. Last season playing at the Cobo Arena in Detroit as well. They play in the Pontiac Silverdome until moving to Auburn Hills during the Bad Boys era. I didn't realize they were in the Silverdome as much as they were. I always thought that was like a weird in-between thing that the Pistons have to do, but then it's like, no, they were in the Silverdome for a long time.
Like,
giant arena for basketball and, using like 1/9 of the arena to play. But, using a lot of the arena more towards the Bad Boys era. But, it's kind of wild. And it's not like the Cobo Arena went away. I mean, it was still there, but obviously the connotations of being in downtown Detroit in the late 70s and 80s, there's probably a lot of reasons why they wanted to be, hey, we're in Pontiac. Ah.
Yeah.
And then later in Auburn Hills, we're in Auburn Hills. Yeah. But now they're back in downtown. So all is right.
All is well. Yeah, sure.
Cobo, I mean, and there's a lot of crime around Cobo Hall. I mean, Hulk Hogan threw, Paul White off of it and stuff. You know, that was
right.
A lot of awful stuff happened.
At least one murder. There was at least one murder at Cobo Hall. So,
Although he did return an hour later unscathed, but he is the giant. Well, so,
I don't know. Was it attempted murder?
Definitely an attempted murder. Honestly, more like reckless homicide, I would say, because Hogan did not want to, and he immediately went like, no, after he did it. So, they were pushing and shoving. One thing led to another, and then, goes Giants.
I'm sure there are worse crimes that we could try Hulk Hogan for than
that. So. right. But anyway, the Pistons finished the season 38-44, fourth place in the Midwest. Tensions lingered from the previous season, especially between Coach Herb Brown and guard Kevin Porter. That's going to happen when you bench a player that's pretty good. Like we said, Porter said, this year, when I'm yanked, I'll accept it. And Brown saying, I may have made some mistakes. Team Captain Bob Lanier would add, you can't change human nature. To be fair, they should trade one of them. So I like that he's like, instead of taking, he very clearly like, look, I don't know. These guys are just annoying. Trade one of them. I don't care who it is. Yeah. Like, get rid of one
both
of these guys.
Why not? Yeah. Get rid of both of them. I don't care.
Right. So they did that. Porter was traded in November, 8 games into the season to the New Jersey Nets, and he would lead the NBA in assists on the season. And then Brown was fired a month later. And then with Brown gone, Porter return via a trade the next year. So play a little brief period in New Jersey, then come back to Detroit again. And then, unfortunately, near more injury issues for him. He'd miss the Pistons' final 12 games of the season after having knee surgery. Detroit would go 5-7 without Lanier and missed the playoffs. So quickly here, we'll go through these last few years because things are not going great in Detroit. The good years are in the past for sure. 1979, the Pistons moved to the Eastern Conference. They had been in the West since 1951, except for 3 years in the late 60s pre-conferences. And then Lanier, still very productive, 23.6 points per game, 9.3 rebounds per game, still an NBA All-Star. But as you mentioned earlier, just limited to games. Like those days of him playing 82 and 81 and being like, I was limping, but I was still playing 81 games or whatever.
Yeah.
Those are pretty much done. He's like a 60 to 50 game guy now, 53 games this year. The team goes 30-52, which is wild because they had Dick Vitale as their coach, and that Dick Vitale, and was it awesome, baby? It was not. It was not at all.
Not awesome.
They were bad. No. He was hospitalized with stress during the season. He also really, really liked drafting guys from the University of Detroit, where he had coached previously. And to be fair, both guys did play pretty well. John Long. So it's not just like, hey, I'm drafting these guys because I know about them. Like, they did pretty well. John Long had 16.1 points per game, and Terry Tyler had 12.9 points per game and 2.5 blocks per game. So good for them. But, missed the playoffs. And then that leads us into 1980, where, Rad and Bob McAdoo.
Yeah. This is going to go great.
We've talked about this before. You had Bob McAdoo. You put him with Bob Lanier. What could possibly go wrong? Except for,
two Bobs. Yeah.
Pretty much everything. So they get an infamous trade with the Boston Celtics, giving up two first-round picks, including what turned out to be the number one overall pick in 1980. But, who are you even going to draft?
Not available.
Yeah. 1980.
It's gonna be good. Yeah.
What do you get? Right. I mean, 19, number one overall pick in 1980 draft. Went good, I'm sure. To be fair, Anyway, they went 16-66. Not good. Vitale is out. Jason, again, shocking. They switch coaches. Richie Adubato. I think about it.
I guess. Yeah.
Comes up. And I forget it. But yeah, that guy.
The B and the D. Yeah, you want to switch them. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I want to make it Abu. Yeah. It's
Adubato.
Yeah. Exactly. Adubato. I always want to. Even though that's Adu. Jesus. 4-8 start, the worst record in the NBA since the 1973 Sixers won 9 games, which is like, you had Bob McAdoo, you had Bob Lanier, what's going on? How is this happening? But well, not going to have Lanier for the whole time, because Lanier's last game for the Pistons is on December 26, 1979, after which the Pistons were 9-28, and then later with the Pistons at 14-40. Lanier is traded on February 4th, 1980 to the 29-27 Milwaukee Bucks for Kent Benson and the 1980 first round pick Larry Drew, later selected there. The Bucks with Lanier finished the season 20-6 and fell to the defending champion Sonics in 7 games in a very, very classic series. Lanier kind of felt like his old self a little bit here. He averaged 19.3 points per game, 56.5 true shooting, 9.3 rebounds per game, 4.4 assists per game, 1 steal per game, and 1.1 blocks per game. Definitely outplayed Jack Sigma as well. And he had 19 points and 15 rebounds in the deciding game. So Lanier said of this trade, you know, I wanted the trade. I got to Milwaukee and the people gave me a standing ovation and really made me feel welcome. It was the start of a positive change. I just wish I had played with that kind of talent around me when I was young. But if I had Marquise Jansen and Sidney Moncrief and all of them around me, damn. So I like that. I like that Bob Lanier finishes every quote with damn.
Damn.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. So Richie Adubato also, he coached the 93 Mavericks.
That, I was going to say, maybe don't hire him as your coach. Things don't seem to go very well.
Hey, he had one season above 500 during that time. Yeah. So in the 90 Mavericks, he can hang his hat on the 42-29 record with the 1990 Mavericks. So
yeah,
it didn't go well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of not great teams too. Yeah. I wonder if you're like trying to, there should be like a modern team that if they're trying to tank, maybe they'll grab him and
get out about it. Yeah. He's only 84.
Yeah. A little old. You know, might not relate to today's players very
right,
much.
Right.
Yeah. I think he had a pretty, if I remember correctly, he was actually pretty damn good in the WNBA, right? Didn't he coach the Liberty? He coached the Liberty for a bunch of years. I don't know if he was in 3 NBA finals with the Liberty. Lost all 3 of them. But yeah, you know what? Finals, that counts for something.
Good.
So
that's good.
I made a conference finals with New York, and then he coached Washington as well, lost in the first round there. Not as good in Washington, but.
All right. Well, there you go. So, don't want to disparage Adubato too much. Yeah, I did not realize that. So cool. Drop Richie Adubato facts on the Bob Lanier podcast.
There
so
it is.
Anyone wants to correct us in our pronunciation of Adubato? That's my best guess. I don't actually 100% know, but we'll figure it out. Okay, going to Milwaukee. So yeah, his first full season with Milwaukee, 1981. And his numbers individually are down a bit. You know, as the team has a more balanced roster. However, they win 60 games. He averages, 14.3 points per game, 6.2 rebounds. The team's second in the NBA in SRS, second in offensive rating, third in defensive rating. Great team. But they had just moved to the Eastern Conference as well, as a little bit later than Detroit did. So, had they been traditionally in the Western Conference, they might have actually gone to the finals. But hey, here behind they got Philly and they have the Celtics, of course, were both great. And hey, they lose to a slightly better team in the Eastern Conference semifinals, Philadelphia in seven games. Lanier's still great in the series, 17.6 points per game, 7.4 rebounds per game, but it wasn't enough. But yeah, I was surprised to learn, going back a little bit to the previous season, the fact that Lanier made so much of a difference in that prior season, because they were 29-27 when they acquired Lanier. They finished 20-6, and he really does. He's a really big boost to them, in those first few seasons where they really where he still has an active role. Yeah, he's more of a role player now, as you said. They have a lot of depth. They've got other big men who can spell him. But he definitely is a big part of those teams. He's not just kind of like hanging in there,
Yeah, no, it's the numbers go down. So you might look at it and go like, oh, Lanier. But yeah, he like integrated very well. And that, credit to him as well, is a guy who was the lead guy, a multiple-time All-Star. It would have been a lot easier, easy for him to come in there and be like, hey, I need my touches or I need to be scoring 20. But he was just like, nah, man, let's do what we got to do. I'll spread the ball around. I just want to win. I just want to get on a team that wins. I've had 10 years. My knees hurt. I just want to win and was able to kind of sacrifice a little bit. Did not shoot as much per game. Did, almost, I think, 8 or 9 less shots per game, some of those late Bucks years. And yeah, the scoring is, 14, 15 points a game. At later years, it'd be 10, but like again, he just wants to win. He just does whatever he can to try to help them win. So credit to him, because, yeah, a lot of, you know, players that had been, you know, 8-time All-Stars or whatever, 7-time All-Stars, aren't as adaptable to, like, hey, you know what? I don't care. I just want to win. I'm cool with scoring, you know, 13 points a game. Let's just get this thing. Let's get in the playoffs and let's win. So,
sure. Yeah. And if you look at, like, the 82 season, for instance, like, they have the Bucks have 7 guys averaging, you know, 12.5 or more points per game. I mean, there's like a lot of guys who are that you're just like spreading around. I mean, obviously they have Moncrief, they have Marcus Johnson, you know, Quinn Buckner, Brian Winters, you know, Junior Bridgman, Mickey Johnson there. I mean, this is, they had so much balance and so much, just so many guys to have just fitting in that role after you've been the guy for so long, is a challenging thing to do. And he did it really well, obviously. And, you know, played really well. But yeah, 82, you know, that's his last All-Star season. It's a little bit of a sentimental choice since the numbers had gone down. But hey, you know, but good for him. The Bucks had 55 wins, but they fell to the Sixers again in 6 games. In the 83 season, they add Dave Cowens, who had retired in 1980. He and Lanier almost kind of split the season. They both played around 40 games or so. And Cowens actually didn't play in the postseason. Lanier did. The Bucks sweep the Celtics that year, which is a bit of a surprise. This was pre-Dennis Johnson, but still they got Larry Bird, they got everyone. I can't remember if they had any significant injuries in that series or not. Let's see. Bird played 3 of the 4 games. Parrish was there, and McHale was there, so they had most of the team there. But yeah, they swept the Celtics, and then would end up losing to the faux Bucks. They actually made it 5-5 by getting 1 game from the Bucks. Nobody's beating the Sixers that year, obviously. This is also around the time where Lanier, he had become president of the Players Union, I believe in 80, and then he helped negotiate a collective bargaining agreement in 83. It avoided a strike, it introduced a salary cap, formalized revenue sharing between players and owners, and introduced regular drug testing. So obviously really, really important in the league's history, helped kind of create a framework that allowed the league to grow later in the 80s and into the 90s. And, you know, good or bad about it, certainly was revolutionary, and he played like an important part and was definitely a leader off the court as well as on the court.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, after listening to some of his past quotes or whatever about Lanier, it does seem like the drug testing part was a big, you know, thing that he really, really wanted as well. So being a part of that, you know, president of the Players Union when that is implemented, and yeah, for whatever, you know, right or wrong, whatever your thoughts are on it, it did transform the NBA. It gave the idea and the impression to the outside world that, okay, this league that once was quote unquote, you know, drug riddled and all that sort of stuff, they're now drug testing, and now, you know, and really, like you said, set the stage for the explosion of popularity that's going to come, you know, just a few years after that, and then just explode to another level in the 90s.
Right.
You know, that drug testing is a big part of that. The entire CBA, that CBA that, you know, Lanier is a part of making is a big reason why a lot of that stuff will happen later. So credit to him for sure.
And then, yeah, Lanier in his final season, 84 season, the highlight of it, although he actually played pretty well, he played 72 games his last season, so he's still, you know, his numbers were still fine. The Bucks, you know, they were getting a little bit older. They fell off a little bit as a team. They won still 150 games. They beat Atlanta and New Jersey in the first round before falling to the Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals. But it was a situation in the Pontiac Silverdome where he became angry with Bill Laimbeer, you know, of course, who kind of taken over Lanier's place as center of the Pistons. Popular in Detroit, but not really anywhere else. They got entangled, and then Lanier decided, hey, I'm going to punch Laimbeer with a left hook and break his nose. So
supportive. I support Bob Lanier in his endeavors. Yes, please.
Right.
More people should have punched Bill Laimbeer and broke his nose, I think, personally.
I don't disagree, Rich. So, yeah, he got a $5,000 fine. And also, the Pistons, that situation, they decided they would not retire his number until 1993. Oh. So,
Worth it.
Probably, I'm sure. Yeah. So, yes, he officially retired September 1984. Said recurring knee injuries is the reason for his retirement. It had been before the 85 season. And they made the Eastern Conference Finals twice. The Bucks, you know, obviously didn't win a championship, didn't make the finals, but, you know, did some great things. After his retirement, Lanier then became a special assistant to NBA Commissioner David Stern and embraced being an ambassador for the league. And, yeah, and I remember that The thing that I think of Bob Lanier is thinking about all those NBA Cares commercials, of thinking about like just so many commercials. You see former players and you see Bob Lanier on there. And that's really what I think of before I ever heard, really knew anything about Bob Lanier as a player. Just, you know, growing up, just all of those, every time the NBA had an event, anytime anybody was interviewed, anytime there was anything where they were trying to highlight, like see something off the court, you'd see Bob Lanier there, you know.
Yeah, just big giant suit, because he's just a giant right. man. And yeah, right. I'm the same way. Like I knew him as guy that wore suit and like, you know, right. was at events more so than I knew him as a player. But yeah, you could just see what a hulking presence he was even there, because he's with like, he's with other NBA players, he's with other human beings. You're like, that guy is massive, good lord, look at that guy. And yeah, I remember more as a guy in glasses with a giant suit, you know, there at every single NBA Cares event, every single charity event, every, you know, All-Star weekend, all that sort of stuff. That's how I knew him before I even knew, you know, of his playing career. So yeah, he became arguably as famous, you know, for an entire generation of fans as that kind of guy, like you said, more so than even the player.
Yeah. And then, you know, one of his contemporaries, Willis Reed, said, yeah, Bob probably wasn't as good a total player as he could have been because of the knee injury, but he was still one of the best all-around big men to ever play the game of basketball. So that's not bad.
No, and if you ever seen him play, I mean, there's I found on YouTube, there's like a 45-minute compilation of like Bob Lanier a video out there. It's really cool, and they like split it up by like, here he is scoring on the right block, here he is scoring on the left block. It's awesome, and I watched all 45 minutes of it. Cause I'm a maniac, but, one thing that you notice from Lanier is like, he plays like a man whose knees hurt. You know what I mean? Like every time you see, you see it, this guy, if like he was fully healthy, would have been even better
right.
because like, you could see that he, like his body is just massive. He's just a big, big dude, but right. you could tell that he's kind of has a limp to him. He's got sort of a slow stride to him, but he's still like scoring at will. I mean, he's just right. so crafty, great footwork. And like I said, one of the things that shocked me the most was how good of an outside shot he had. And it, like
right. Right.
he would be able to, you know, shoot from 15 to 16 feet easily, and you're like, man, like in any other era, like god, that guy would have been, you know, insane. Like a dude who can back it down like that, who has great, you know, like behind the, you know, back to the basket, great, like, you know, like he's a great hook shot, and then also could shoot from like 15 to 16 feet. I mean, man, that, you see why he scored so much despite, and yeah, you see him run and you're like, oh my god, he looks like he's in insane pain like constantly, and well, he kind of was. But I was able to live a pretty decent life after the NBA, and like you said, what became a pretty prominent figure in the, you know, the charities and NBA Cares and all that sort of stuff after his career.
Yeah,
too. So
absolutely, yeah.
All right, some key games, quick little key games of Lanier's career. His debut game, obviously, that one is very prominent. As you said earlier, you know, he obviously injures his knee in the regional championship game in a collision with Chris Ford of Villanova. The aforementioned Chris Ford, first guy to ever hit a three in NBA history. Regardless of that, Detroit Pistons still select him first overall in the 1970 draft. Also drafted by the New York Nets in the 1970 ABA draft. So he does sign with the NBA, as you said. He does it while in the hospital recovering from his knee surgery. That's a pretty good draft, too, that 1970 NBA draft. Other Hall of Famers from that draft. All top four picks. Bob Lanier, Rudy Tomjanovich, Pete Maravich, and Dave Collins all made the Hall of Fame. Second-round picks Calvin Murphy and Nate Archibald are also Hall of Famers. Seventh-round pick Charlie Scott. And then eighth-round pick Dan Issel, also your Hall of Famers. Eighth-round pick Dan Issel, a Hall of Famer. But Lanier does, despite the injury, gut through the pain to play his debut October 14th, 1970 against the Seattle Supersonics. Detroit wins 113-117. Lanier has 22 points and 6 rebounds. Dave Bing has 25. Jimmy Walker chipped in 22 there. So, and you mentioned a little bit as well that he just was never healthy that earlier year. He would say that he probably should have just sat out. Would have been better for him. Would have been better for the team. But he just didn't do it. He kept going. He does rehabilitate his knee, though. This is pretty awesome. With the help of the aforementioned coach, Butch Van Brendekoff, he says he had Lanier stay with him at his beachfront house for 2.5 weeks and run in the sand. So I love this idea of like Butch, yeah. you know, with his feet up, you know, with some sort of drink and, you know, in yeah. hand, like a Mai Tai, and the Bob Lanier's just running in the sand. He's like, more,
run the sand.
Going.
Yeah.
Keep going.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if Butch is a drinker, but I could see, you know, yeah. it could be a kiddie cocktail, a Mai Tai. I don't know what it is.
There you go. I don't know.
His feet are definitely up. He's definitely enjoying the beach lifestyle there. But anyway, there you go. Next game here, November 20th, 1972, a career-high 48 points versus Portland. So after his up-and-down rookie year, as we said, like, you know, production's not quite there. He does play in 82 games. His second year, he bursts, you know, he just comes onto the scene like crazy in 1972. Makes his first All-Star game. He averages 25.7 points per game, 14.2 rebounds per game. He picked up right where he leaves off in 1973 as well, averaging 24.3 points per game, 14.2 points per game for Detroit. In the month of November, and it was in this month that he'd have his best scoring game ever with 48 points against the Trailblazers. Lanier would put up 40 points more than 20 times in his career as well, but Lanier went in this game 19 of 35 from the field, 10 of 12 from the free throw line, and had a game high 16 rebounds as well. So yeah, 48 points and 16 boards, not a bad day at the office. And speaking of rebounds and speaking of this season as well, December 22nd, 1972, he gets 33 rebounds against the Seattle Supersonics. Just an incredible output here. His 33 rebounds nearly matched the entire Sonics team, which had 39. He also chipped in 23 points. The Pistons won 109-97. This is the only 30-plus rebound game in Lanier's career. He would have 49 regular season and playoff games with 20-plus rebounds, though, but only one time does he eclipse 30 rebounds here in December of 1972. 1974, the All-Star Game. You mentioned that earlier. He's the All-Star Game MVP. He apparently loves the air up in Seattle, likes the Space Needle, likes Mount Rainier. I don't know what it is.
I guess, yeah.
Because he's grabbing rebounds against Seattle. Hell, Portland, he's scoring a bunch of points. He just likes the Pacific Northwest, I think. So he likes little cloud cover, a little, you know, I don't blame him. Nice I do, too. Yeah. I like the Pacific Northwest, too. So he takes part in the 1974 NBA All-Star Game, his third All-Star berth over the first 4 years. On this night, though, he is the most valuable player, scoring 24 points. En route to being named the MVP. Now, okay, here's a little bit of issue I have. I don't want to take anything away from Lanier. I didn't want to take away his you know, having the record largest shoe or whatever.
Okay.
But Spencer Haywood has 23 points and 11 rebounds in this game. Bob Lanier has 24 points and 10 rebounds. So he has one more point, Bob Lanier, and one less rebound, okay?
Okay.
Spencer Haywood plays for the Seattle Supersonics.
Sure.
We could give it to the hometown guy.
It is
Key Arena, you know, go home happy. Come on.
Maybe they, maybe they didn't like Lanier, maybe they just didn't like Haywood for some, you know, some reason. Maybe the whole, the whole I came in the league thing.
I don't even know who votes for the All-Star Game MVP.
Who votes for the All-Star Game MVP, man? That's,
I think now it's like some dumb, I don't know, it's probably on TikTok or some shit. I don't know what you do now to vote for it, but in those days, I don't know who voted for it. But yeah, I mean, Spencer Haywood, come on.
I'm assuming the sports writers probably voted for it, yeah. I would think so.
Well, I can't imagine sports writers having a vendetta against any players, so that's impossible that could happen, so there must have been another reason. But
either way,
what's awesome is Spencer Haywood and Lanier were on the same team, and they dominated for the West, giving them the 134-123 win, so good for them. 25-point triple-double here, March 12th, 1974, one of Lanier's best games of his career. He puts up 25 points, 19 rebounds, and 11 assists to help the Pistons beat Golden State 113-108. He should have just played in the West Coast, if we're being honest. Like, clearly the air was helping him. Clearly his bones were better. I mean, Detroit was honestly, I mean, I'm sore constantly in the winter in Chicago, so yeah, maybe he should have not played in Detroit. This would have worked out great for him, but definitely out of the ordinary for Lear, who had Bing on his team and really didn't need or want to pass. He had only four double-digit assist games in his entire career, including a 12-assist game against Golden State in December of 1973. So he just likes playing West Coast teams here. But
well, I mean, I guess it's good the Pistons were out West for his career.
Yeah, exactly.
That way,
sure.
That way he gets to go out West, gets to play well, you know, gets that, lack of humidity. You know, it's good for his knees, you know. Mm-hmm. It makes sense, yeah.
I'm absolutely with him, so.
Yeah.
Playoff debut here, March 30th, 1974. So nobody would obviously confuse the Pistons for the Boston Celtics in the early days of the NBA and the early days of professional basketball. But they were still a team that made the playoffs regularly. Yeah, they did so with records such as 28-44 and 30-45 and 34-46. But who cares? They still made it to the dance.
They made two finals.
To the dance. Goddamn it! That's all that matters. Yeah. So by 1976-64, though, that well had run dry, and the Pistons would make only one playoff run in the next decade in 1968. Finally, in 1974, thanks in large part to Lanier, they are back. Lanier helps the team put together their first ever 50-win season. Detroit is matched up with the upstart Bulls, and like we talked about earlier, they're battled in a hard-fought seven-game series. In his playoff debut, Lanier scores 27 points, grabs 13 rebounds, and overall in that series, he would average 26.3 points per game, 15.3 rebounds per game, and then the two-point loss in Game 7 ends their playoffs, which would become, unfortunately, an all-too-familiar trend for of playoff... And failure is probably not the right word, but playoff disappointment for Lanier and the Pistons. 1975, out in the first round. 1976, lost in Game 6 of the Western Conference Semifinals. 1977, out in the first round, and then, as we just talked about, unfortunately, his run to Milwaukee doesn't go that much better. The team is better. They just can't get over the hump. They lose two times in the Eastern Conference Finals and numerous other times in the Eastern Conference Semifinals. And then December 26th, we talked about this game a little bit earlier, December 26th, 1979, the last game for Lanier in Detroit. And the Pistons, absolute disaster that year. They'd go, 16-66, as we said. Lanier asked for a trade, and Detroit obliged, sending him to Milwaukee. But in his final game as a Piston, Lanier had what else but a double-double, 24 points and 13 rebounds. He would end his career with 442 double-doubles.
Yeah, some great ones there. We've been wrapping it up. We got a few more anecdotes, few more things to talk about on Lanier. Growing up, initially, he wanted to play basketball, but people were like, nope, you're too big, you're too clumsy, he was told by one of his coaches that his feet, which were size 11 at age 11, were too large for him to become a successful athlete.
That guy is dumb.
Yeah.
That guy doesn't understand sports.
Although he was 6'5" by age 16, he did not make the varsity basketball squad his sophomore year at high school. He was deemed to be too clumsy. Well, it got better. He eventually he decided, hey, he's big, and he got more coordinated, and he was awesome in the rest of high school and in college. And then we talked about into his pro career. Also notable, hey, the man enjoyed a good fight. Or if he didn't enjoy a good fight, he certainly partook in many of them. In fact,
yes, and won there's, most of
yes,
them.
Right. There's a, it talks about, there's an article from 1977, talks about he fights against Bill Robinson, against Bob Christian 1971, knocking him out. There was a pretty famous brawl actually that was during the playoffs where they were facing the Warriors. I forget which series it was, but basically a fan came out and tried to get into it with him, and he punched the fan out. So,
That's what you get. Hey. Who comes at Bob Lanier? Are you kidding me?
Right.
What are you doing? Why would you ever do that? That's not going to end well for you. And it didn't.
Right.
And it shouldn't.
No. And even Maurice Lucas was like, who is, of course, one of the famous fighters.
Notorious fighter, yeah.
Right. And he says, if I found myself looking face to face with Lanier, he says, I'd invite him for drinks after the game. So even Maurice Lucas isn't going to mess with him. So, but Lanier said there was one guy. Yeah, he decides like maybe I'm not going to fight. It was Will Chamberlain. He said, he talks about where we're playing in L.A. They had the ball in an inbounds play. Will and I were jockeying position. The ref stepped in and told us if we didn't cut it, he called double foul. Well, I stepped in on Will again. He just picked me up and moved me out of the way. And that was it. So no messing with Will Chamberlain. One of my favorite stories here is that, when he was at, NBA Cares or whatever events that he was going on, once Shaquille O'Neal came in the league, people figured like, I'm Shaq's dad. And then he just said, people would tell him, oh, you're wearing them big shoes. And he'd just go along with it. Yeah, I'm Shaq's dad. He just didn't even bother correcting people at a certain point. He's like, yeah, he's going to do that. And then Isaiah Thomas talking about his NBA debut, which was against the Bucks. Lanier had just come back from, he'd just been traded a year and a half before. So it was still novel for him to be playing in Detroit. He's like, I was having some success in the game early on. He was coming down the lane. And he said, I remember Lanier literally grabbed me out of the air, gently set me down and said, don't come down here no more. And for the rest of the game, I became a great jump shooter. He was one of the true enforcers of the game. He patrolled the paint. I remember the moment vividly in my head. This is from the Detroit Free Press obituary for Lanier. So, yeah. And then, as we said, after, of course, was an ambassador in the NBA, he became involved in 1989 in the NBA's Stay in School program. Did that for a few years. And then he actually went back. He did do a little bit of coaching. He was an assistant with Don Nelson once he was with the Warriors toward the end of his time with the Warriors. That was also during the time in which Nelson was having some issues with Chris Webber, thought he would maybe try to help out with that. Didn't really work so much. Nelson ended up stepping down. Lanier was the interim coach for the team's final 37 games, 12-25 record as an interim coach. And then Rick Adelman would come back and they returned to his role as assistant. Later, then, of course, he would have the role as the special assistant to the commissioner in the NBA executive office. Did that for many years. And then, yeah, he served youth in programs that support education, family development, and health-related classes. So, like I said, good guy, did a lot of good things for a lot of people, great ambassador for the league, and definitely will be missed.
Yeah, absolutely will be missed. But hopefully we did his career to some justice here.
Yeah,
and yeah, hopefully everybody takes the time to you know, if you don't know about Bob Lanier, you haven't heard of Bob Lanier, you haven't watched any clips, you know, again, I hate that it has to be, you know, death that makes people do that, but you know, if it has to be, then this is maybe a great time to you know, check him out and see about this guy. And he's arguably, I would say, in some ways, most famous for, you know, the line that he's quoted in Airplane, you know, more so than that's something that, like, throughout the entire week, like, you just heard people bring up Airplane, you know, and that Kareem, I don't know who came up with that line. I don't know if Kareem came up with the line or whatever, but that he was included in that line is just an all-time iconic thing. And it's either Kareem showing the respect to him or the writer showing the respect to him. But yeah, just an all-time great. It speaks to his toughness, his strength, all that sort of stuff. But probably arguably more famous for that than anything else in his entire life, as that movie it continues to you know, be one of the all-time great comedies of all time. So
yeah. No, it's great. And yeah, the actual quote is, "Tell your old man to drag Walton and Lanier up and down the court for 48 minutes." And Lanier loved that. Like he said, like he would show, like, you know, his kids that are his grandkids.
Yeah, man, that's me.
Like, you know, it was definitely something he appreciated being a part of. And yeah, it's one of the great random pop culture things. And yeah, something that he'll always be immortalized for. You know, who's Lanier? Well, let me tell you. Yeah. So yeah, if you're watch the movie, and somebody's like, who's Lanier? Like, hey, there's a podcast to listen to. Mm-hmm. Check out the Over My NBA podcast. We'll tell you all about Lanier. So
absolutely, we will.
Yeah. All right. We did. Here we are. So yeah, hopefully everyone enjoyed the podcast. You can, if you're into what we're doing, and please leave us a rating and review on the podcast platform in which you listen to us. We greatly appreciate that. It helps spread the word about the show. And you can get any feedback on what we did today. You can, we are on social media at Facebook and Twitter at Over and Back NBA. And yeah, so thanks everyone again for listening. We're back again soon.